Phanon's TIE fighter rested, its port solar wing array crumpled against a trio of trees. A stormtrooper stood guard near the damaged vehicle and was engrossed in conversation with two men in the distinctive uniform of Zinj's raptors. Face crawled forward to hear what they were saying. The stormtrooper's voice, amplified by the electronic speaker of his helmet, was easiest to make out.
See here? Spots of blood. He was crawling here. We have men on speeder bikes. They say his trail goes a little less than a kilometer and just disappears on stony ground where things get hilly.
The two raptors sighed, testimony to the stormtrooper's incompetence, and turned toward their speeder bikes.
We'll find him,
one said.
Then we'll tell your people how it was done.
They fired up the bike's thrusters and headed out. Face stood up from behind a bush in their path. His first blaster shot took the right-hand raptor in the chest, sending him tumbling from the back of the speeder. His next shot took the second man in the side of the head. Ahead, the stormtrooper was raising his blaster rifle stock to his shoulder. Face threw himself to the ground, once again partially concealed by the bush, and squeezed off three shots. The stormtrooper let out a moan and fell forward. There was an explosion from behind Face. The second speeder bike had slammed into a tree and exploded. The first speeder bike had fetched up against the tree but had not detonated. Face hurried toward it. The injured speeder bike carried Face along Fainan's trail of crushed underbrush and scored mud. He traveled a half kilometer through the forest and reached a narrow, shallow river. Fainan's crawling trail emerged on the other bank, more obvious than ever. What if Fainan had crawled as far as the first batch of terrain that would no longer carry a sign of his passage, then had crawled back to the river? It was a sensible strategy. It had thrown off his pursuer. Face turned rightward the direction the river flowed and began cruising slowly above its surface. A kilometer downriver, Face felt a blinding flash of pain to the side of his head. He almost fell off the speeder bike. He came upright fast, blaster in hand, aiming at the elegant drapery of grasses to his left. Grasses and one pale hand sticking out beyond them, waving. It was Phenom, sweating, pale, leaning against the bank in the shade of the leaves.
I'm glad to see you,
he said. So glad you decided to brain me with a rock.
I can't shout.
Are you hurt? Phenom nodded.
Badly?
Another nod.
I'm pretty sure I'm bleeding internally. I don't think I'm going to get much farther.
You're going to get to Hawk's bad base. Can you ride on the back of the bike? Fainan was long in answering.
I think so.
Fainan lay on his back on the bike. And Face, finding a rope in the vehicle's small cargo compartment, tied it to the outrigger and was now a couple of meters ahead, dragging the bike while Fainan rode.
Face, thanks for coming back for me.
If you got captured, I'd have to fill out forms.
Reasonable. By the way, do you have a plan? Or is walking in the river pretty much the extent of it?
That's the biggest part of it, sure, Face said. But sooner or later, we have to reach a community. Right there, we can rig a signal to Base. We'll probably be off this rock by dawn.
Right.
Fainan winced and half curled up as another wave of pain hit him.
Oh, forget this. We've got to get you medical help immediately, and that means calling in Zinj's forces and surrendering.
Fainan uncurled again, but rocked back and forth a little, obviously unable to hold still.
Come here.
Face flashed back to him. When he was alongside, Fainan grabbed him by the neck of his pilot's suit.
Listen to me, Face. We do not surrender. Your face and my prosthetic modifications are going to be too easy to identify. If we surrender, the whole of that plan just evaporates. And we have to start all over where Finch is concerned. I'm not going to have that.
Even at the cost of your own life?
That's right.
Exhausted by his exertions, Thanen lay back on the seat.
Starting over means more time. More time to presents to bombard more colonies, to destroy more ships.
He took a long breath.
If I die...
You're not going to die.
Shut up and listen, please. If I die, you can't let them find my body. They identify me. Do whatever it takes you to get back to the unit. But don't let them find you.
You're not going to die.
Promise me you'll dispose of me.
Face shuddered. I promise. But you're not going to die.
Well, I'll try to hold you to that promise, too.
His organic eye closed.
There's no traffic, yet we're stopped. Why is that?
Face grinned and flashed back to his towing rope. Your fault for hiring an incompetent driver. 200 meters farther on, Face heard Fainan gasping for breath. He splashed back to him. Fainan held out a hand. There was something in it. Face took the data pad from him. What's this?
It's called a data pad. New Republic and Imperial children learn about them from the time they're very young.
Funny.
Take it back with you. It has some last thoughts on it.
The coldness in Face's legs crept up to inhabit the rest of him, and he shuddered again.
Not last thoughts, Tom. Don't be so fatalistic. You're just punishing yourself.
Fainan managed a hoarse chuckle.
You wouldn't know.
What do you mean?
You do what you do, so you can punish a little boy who wants to make some holograms for the Empire.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't it? Face. Just how much do you think you owe the New Republic?
Well,
some. For your acting. For the fact that it furthered Imperial causes.
That's right.
It's not right. You can't measure what a boy did in innocence against what a man has to do for the rest of his life.
Now you're raving.
Oh, that's good to know. Hey, we're stopped again.
A bit farther, and Fainan said in a hoarse whisper Face could barely hear over the whine of the repulsive.
It's up there.
Face looked up. Just crossing before one of Halmud's moons was a brightly illuminated triangle, tiny in the distance. Iron Fist was making an orbit. Not too intimidating from this far away, is it? He said. Fainan didn't answer. I said, not too intimidating from here, is it? Fainan still did not respond. Face stood where he was, unwilling to turn and look to walk back on his cold, numbed legs to confirm what he feared. But the speeder bike slowly drifted forward until it was beside him. Fainan's chest did not rise or fall, but his organic eye was still open, directed upward, and his expression, for once lacking pain, lacking the shields of sarcasm or manufactured self-appreciation, was that of a child wondering at the glittery beauty of the stars. Face's vision blurred as his own eyes filled with the first tears he'd shed since he was a boy. At dawn, Face rose from his makeshift camp. He took one last look at the bundle he was leaving behind. Ruined speeder bike, ruined pilot, beneath the thin thermal blanket he'd retrieved from the bike's cargo, and then headed into the trees. Within an hour, he passed by the gutted hulk of Fainan's TIE fighter. There were no bodies here. Zinj's investigators had come and gone. He swam out to where his interceptor lay partially submerged. He had to act fast. His window of opportunity would be a narrow one. The interceptor rose to the water's surface and shot into the air. Moments later, he hovered over the glade where he'd spent the night. There it was, the black thermal blanket atop his friend. He could not wait. Revulsion for the deed he was about to perform had been his companion last night. He did not have time for it now. He rotated so that his interceptor was pointed straight down, as though it were about to fly into the ground. Then, face fired. His lasers turned the center of the glade into a burning inferno, charring speeder by organic body and prosthetic parts into a melted crater of ash and bubbling metal. He fired until there was nothing recognizable there, nothing for the investigators of Vins or Halman to identify as Tom Thanos. Then he turned his bow skyward and fled to space. At the end of Face's debriefing, Wedge asked, "You've eaten?" Face nodded. "Good. Listen, Face, I know this isn't going to help very much, but you did everything possible to preserve the integrity of this mission and the lives of your fellow pilots. I think highly of what you accomplished down there. But I was unable to bring Thanon back alive." Wedge nodded. "I've been unable to bring a lot of friends back alive." "Yes, sir." Face looked reflective. "I knew Ton better than anyone in the unit. I think I should at least help write the letter of notification to his family." "Ah, well, that's not going to be necessary, Face. The person we're supposed to notify in the case of his death is you. You're also the beneficiary of his will." Face couldn't even manage a reply to that statement. He just gaped. "I have to process some of these documents. In the meantime, I want you to get some rest." "Yes, sir." Face rose after a long time. Most of it had not been spent sleeping, for his mind was fully occupied by images of the last 2 days. The light on his terminal was blinking, sign of messages or files received. He brought the terminal up. A dispatch from the commander. Lara, Wraith 13, was now his wing and the replacement medic. "A copy of Ton Fainan's will." Face skipped it. "A message from Fainan. It was dated and timed less than an hour before his death." Face took a deep breath and brought it up.
"Face, I don't think I'm going to last too long. I flattered myself in thinking that you're going to take it kind of hard. While part of me wishes you wouldn't, another part appreciates it. I also know that you're going to punish yourself for this. I wish you wouldn't. I've left you some credits. A fair amount, actually. I was the only son of wealthy parents, and I didn't manage to spend it all on good times and prosthetics. By the terms of my will, some of what you receive has to be used for a specific project. If you don't use it for that, the whole amount goes to an already wealthy actor you mentioned with a certain amount of contempt. So there. I really don't have much time here, and I'm struggling to find some way to sum up what I need to say. I guess it boils down to this. Thanks for being my friend. I needed one, and you were it. Signed, Ton Thanon. Pilot, wit, and superior intellect."
Face waited for some sort of blow to hit him, but he was left only with the dull ache that had been his companion all through the night. He brought up Fainan's will and read it as well. "Some of us will, as you know, be away on missions with varying levels of consequence," Wedge said. They were in the conference room module, packed in around its table. "Mission one is the meeting with Zinj," Wedge continued. "Face commands, and he has chosen Dia and Kel to accompany him. This mission will utilize the shuttle Nara. Mission two is Lara's meeting with her brother. We hope that will turn out to be nothing more than a joyful family reunion, but there's a chance that this is a probe by Zinj. Lieutenant Donos will accompany her, and they'll be in their X-wings." Wedge noticed one of the pilot's hands raised. "Yes, Custin."
Sir, you remember the special mission I talked to you about, sneaking a program into Iron Fist's communication system so that it'll broadcast its location occasionally? Sir, I finished the program in time for this mission.
It won't be for this mission, Keston.
Damn it, sir. This is the only opportunity we're certain we're going to have. We need to take it. You're being too cautious, and that's going to cost us.
The other pilots looked between Keston and Wedge.
Wedge took a deep breath, giving himself a brief moment to calm himself.
Now, imagine that you're a New Republic pilot and you feel a need to criticize a superior officer's performance or thinking. All else being equal, should you do so in private or in a public forum?
Keston seemed visibly to sag.
In private, sir.
Face, seated in the cockpit of the shuttle Nara, watched two gray blurs flash by. Lara and Donas's X-Wings. He envied them. The prospect of facing Warlord Zinge was making him more than a little tense, and the skin around his mouth itched, but he could not scratch it even if he took his Imperial pilot helmet off. His whole face was crisscrossed with horrible puckering scars, artificial ones created by painting a makeup chemical across his skin and letting it dry. He incorporated his own genuine scar into the design of false scar tissue.
Power, he said.
97%. Reserves, 100%.
That was Dia, seated beside him in the co-pilot seat. But it wasn't the Dia he was used to. She was now in the guise of Seku, her Hawkbat's identity. Face found her attractive under normal circumstances. This barbaric pirate persona was even more visually appealing. Kel stuck his head up between the two seats. There was more to his head now. He wore a false mustache, beard, and absurdly long wig of fiery red hair. Hull seal secure.
All right. Strap in and prep for space.
No. Wait a minute. Kel, drag Keston out of the smuggling compartment and send him packing. We can't have any stowaways.
Grinning, Kel moved aft. A portion of what had looked like seamless wall swung down on hinges, and he reached inside. An expression of surprise crossed his face, and he ducked down to look.
Hey, no Keston. He dropped into the seat behind Dia.
Face nodded. Prepare for space.
Together, Lara and Donas approached from the east, where a rise overlooked the destroyed town. Lara assured Donas that a farmhouse had once stood there. She didn't tell him that she knew this only from publicly available information. What she could see of terrain suggested that the one-time community was now a series of charred furrows and craters. In the midst of it all, though, was a house, a prefabricated dwelling of an incongruous blue. Donas sighted in on it with his sniper rifle, adjusting the range on his sight.
They'll probably scan for large life forms when I arrive, Lara said, in case I brought allies, which I have.
We're nearly a kilometer out, Donas said. They might have a scanner that could find me, but probably not. Have you got your comm link to broadcast continuously?
No, they're sure to check for that. I'm going in with it off, and I'm leaving it off.
He looked at her. That's not a good idea. If you get in trouble...
If I hold up a fist, it means I'm in trouble.
Then come to the rescue. He sighed, obviously unhappy. All right, but call for help the instant you feel out of control. Face's team brought their shuttle into the designated hangar on the Iron Fist. They were met by a reception committee, an officer and a half dozen stormtroopers. Showtime, Face. They descended the boarding ramp in proper form. First came Face as the Hawkbat leader, General Cargan, Dia and Kel to either side of and behind him. Face stopped directly before the officer.
I'm General Cargan, founder and leader of the Hawkbat Independent Space Force.
He gestured first to Dia, then Kel.
Captain Seku, my second in command. Lieutenant Disick, my bodyguard.
He put on an urbane smile and lowered his voice.
I believe we have an invitation.
Indeed you do.
General Melvar, I'm in charge of the Warlord's assault forces, and I welcome you to Iron Fist.
He led them toward the bridge. where a full-length dining table was set. He had them sit before offering introductions.
Warlord, allow me to present you General Cargan, Captain Seku, and Lieutenant Disick, honored representatives of the Hawkbats. General Cargan, your host, the Warlord Zinge.
Face offered a seated half-bow.
Zinge turned his attention to the guests and smiled.
Good to meet you at last. Welcome aboard Iron Fist.
Castin Don lay on his back in full stormtrooper armor, the helmet tucked in beside his head, and could still occupy only half of the smuggling compartment. Tape held a mirror in place beside him. The mirror was a long strip of reflective material. It was carefully situated so that it covered him, but led anyone looking in the compartment to believe that it was empty at the rear. Now he wriggled out into Nara's main compartment. His plan was underway. He had to get out of the shuttle and hangar without the hangar guards noticing, find his way to a full-function computer coupler, slice his way in through ship security, and upload his program. Then get back and wait. It would be tough, but he was a wraith. He could do it. And days from now, when Iron Fist was a glowing ball of superheated gas, or a prize vessel in the hands of the New Republic, Commander Antilles would be forced to acknowledge that Castin had been right all along. Lara drew to a stop a dozen steps from the house. "Hail the camp," she called out, a standard Aldivian greeting from arriving visitors. The front door slid open, and Tavin, her brother, was there. He beamed. "Lara, I have someone to introduce you to."
"I imagine so."
He beckoned, and a moment later was joined in the doorway by another man.
"Lara, let me introduce you to Captain Rossick. He has been most anxious to speak to you."
The man advanced to shake Lara's hand.
"Lieutenant Pretisel, allow me to congratulate you on all you've accomplished."
She took the compliment with a frosty little smile.
"Your record demonstrates that you're a smart one. It shouldn't take you too long to learn how to use the equipment we're going to give you."
"Equipment?"
"A special transmitter. We can use it to track Mon Raymonda and put an end to her."
Lara appeared to think about it.
"I'm sorry, that won't work. Security is very high on Mon Raymonda."
"Well, is there any way to transmit using Mon Raymonda's communication systems?"
"Yes, that could be done."
Rossick's pocket beeped at him. He drew out a datapad.
"Nobody react. I'm getting a signal from a life scanner inside the house. There is someone a little less than a kilometer to our east."
Lara tried to remain nonchalant.
"That's my wingman. He accompanied me here for security's sake."
Rossick gave her a cool look.
"Well, the problem is, he's now close enough that he might have seen me. We can't have that. The rebels have hollows of me in their records. You two keep talking. I'll go back into the house, exit the rear way, and circle around to get behind him."
"No," Lara said. "I can't show up on Alderby with my wingman and then go back to the wraiths without him. They'd be curious."
She did little to sacrifice the sarcasm in her voice. Rossick considered.
"Very well. New plan. I go and kill your wingmen. Then we take you and your two X-Wings back to Iron Fist. Right now."
Face was actually enjoying his main course, and idly hoping it wasn't poison, when Zinge asked a question he wasn't prepared for.
"Am I mad, General Cargan, or do you have an Ewok pilot in your unit?"
Face froze. He swallowed and hastily cleared his throat.
"What leads you to that conclusion, sir?"
"Intercepted transmissions. Analysis of the vocal characteristics of your pilot, Hawkbat 1, suggests that he was probably, though not definitely, an Ewok. But I don't understand how that could be possible."
Face shrugged and ran through a mental list of a dozen different possible responses.
"Well, he is an Ewok, mostly an Ewok. Lieutenant Catch, my most ferocious pilot, actually. He can't really reach the controls, but a somewhat crooked prosthetics expert on Tatooine built him a set of hand and leg extensions he can wear, so his height is not limited him in the least."
But I thought Ewoks were far too primitive to handle complex machinery or astronautics theory and practice. Too primitive even to learn an adequate vocabulary in basic.
They are, but Katch was modified. We don't know where or why it happened. He was taken from the sanctuary moon of Endor as a cub, reared in a laboratory somewhere, and fed chemicals that apparently increased his ability to learn. He's a genius, especially with mathematics.
That was, in fact, the true background of Piggy, and Face was suddenly very glad to have it on hand as a resource. Zinge and Melvar exchanged a glance, and Face suddenly felt his heart race. There was something in their expressions, as brief as that glance was, that told Face this subject was of vital interest to them. What did it mean? Return to Iron Fist? I don't think so. Lara shook her head. I'll be far more valuable to Zinge on Mon Raymonda.
Well, it's not going to happen that way.
Gloom settled over Lara as she realized what she had to do. As she realized that she was about to take prisoners who knew her secret. That she had to reveal that secret to Wedge Antilles. Put your hands in the air. You're now in the custody of the New Republic. From underneath his tunic, Tavin brought out a small blaster and aimed it at her. Rossick glanced at Tavin, his expression openly derisive, and merely placed his hand on the butt of his own blaster.
You don't appear to be in a position to make such demands, Pettiful. Your partner is a kilometer away and may not even be watching. I know you haven't been broadcasting. My scanner would have told me.
Lara looked at the blaster in Tavin's hand and raised her arms, a gesture that was half surrender, half insolent stretch. I'll give you two, just one chance. Throw down your weapons now.
Rossick said, keep her covered. I'm going to circle around behind her partner.
You should have surrendered, Lara said. She closed her hands into fists. A brilliant lance of light from the hill took Tavin right in the stomach. Lara's blast took Rossick in the side. He hit the dirt and lay there, unmoving. Donos ran down from his sniper position. She tried to simulate rattled nerves and was surprised to discover that she had them for real. Part of her reaction, she knew, was the sudden relief that her secret was once again safe.
Are you all right?
Donos asked. Lara nodded. They wanted... Her voice broke, and once again it was a genuine reaction. They wanted me to go back to Iron Fist with them. I was just going to disappear. She shuddered. I couldn't do that.
Now,
Zinge said over the iced pastry that was their dessert course,
to the matter which has led to our meeting.
Face sat back, assuming a false expression of contentment.
Please.
I am about to embark on a mission. It will be a large-scale military engagement. I anticipate starfighter and capital ship response, and need all the starfighter support I can get.
An aide appeared over his shoulder and whispered to him. His expression did not change, but he rose.
I must attend to business for a few moments. Melvar, please continue this briefing.
He took a few steps away with the aide. Melvar smiled, an expression that suggested he'd be happiest if pulling the wings off insects. It's an orbital refueling and trade station. In its warehouses is a considerable quantity of material we need, critical supplies. We also need some time to load that material into our cargo vessels. Not a lot of time, but enough for the planetary defenses below to bring in squadrons from capital ships arrayed around the planet.
What we need to know,
Zinn said, returning to his seat,
is how many starfighters you can bring to bear in support of this mission.
Face considered.
I have more Hawkbats than I do starfighters, many with technical proficiency, many with other skills.
You will provide me with dossiers on the Hawkbats who have technical skills, so I can evaluate possible roles for them?
I will. Just give me a way to send them to you. Also, as much data as you can on this mission, so we can run our own simulations.
Melvar produced a datapad from a pocket and slid it over to him. Zinge stared back toward the security foyer,
the route by which the Hawkbats had entered the command center. Two stormtroopers there were advancing, dragging a third stormtrooper backward between them. The third man was limp in their arms and had no helmet on. His hair was golden blonde.
"I must be sure of your ruthlessness," Zinch said. "So please shoot this man for me."
The stormtroopers dumped their human cargo by the foot of the table. The man they had carried was Kaftan Don. His eyes were closed. There was a blaster burn mark on his right leg, but his chest rose and fell in regular rhythm. Face swallowed the bile that tried to crawl up his throat and hoped that he had not gone as pale as he felt.
"Kaftan, you idiot," he thought. "You've killed us all."
"Not much of a target," Face said, stalling.
There had to be something he could do without revealing their hand. Nothing came to mind.
"True," Zinj said. "Would you shoot him, please?"
"Oh, I should imagine," Face said, but did not move. "It seems rather a costly test for you, though, having to shoot one of your own stormtroopers."
"Not one of mine," said Zinj. "An intruder. Would you shoot him, please?"
Face clamped down on the panic rising within him.
"Of course," he said. "But how much are you paying? Intelligent life is the most precious commodity in the galaxy. Consequently, I never take it without adequate financial reward."
Dia stood, her sudden motion startling everyone at the table. She smiled at the warlord, a heart-melting expression, and said in her husky Seku voice,
"The general can't abandon his policies. They're written up in the articles of the Hawkbats. But I can do this for you as a private commission. The blaster, please?"
She held out her hand. Face felt a sudden surge of elation. She had a plan. Melvar nodded. His officer handed Dia the blaster pistol. She checked the charge, moved over beside Kaftan, and shot him in the throat. A chatty junior officer, apparently cheered by the murder of the intruder, led the Hawkbats back to their shuttle. Once the security foyer doors closed behind them, Zinj rose. He nodded at the body of the intruder. Smoke still rose from what was left of its neck.
"Melva, hand that over to our technicians. I want to know who he was, where he came from, and how he got aboard Iron Fist, since he appears not to have been one of the Hawkbats after all."
Face made it clear by gesture and private code that he wanted the others to remain silent, even as they accelerated away from Iron Fist. Only when they had entered hyperspace on their first leg out did he speak.
"Report. He was already dead."
The words burst from Dia like water, finally breaching an old dam.
"He was breathing."
"No, he wasn't. It was some sort of trick. Some sort of mechanical pump. I don't know."
She took a deep, shuddering breath.
"There was blaster charring on his armor's pelvic plate that should have continued up into his chest plate, but didn't. So they had to have put a new chest plate on him to replace the one that was burned through when he was killed. Face, he was dead."
"Accepted." Face sighed and leaned back. "Will you be all right?"
I'll be... Her voice choked off. She gulped a couple of times and then just stared.
"Dia?"
Her voice was a moan.
"She's dead."
"She? She who?"
"Dia. Dia Asik. She's dead."
He put heat and anger into his words.
"No, you are not."
"Yes. She would not have done that. She would not have shot him. She would have died first. She is dead, Face."
He heard a snap, heard metal slide on leather, and was prepared when her hand came up with her blaster and its barrel came in line with her chin. He released her with his left hand and got his thumb under the trigger, preventing her from squeezing it. She shrieked, a haunted noise compounded of agony and bottomless guilt.
"Face, let me."
"No."
"Yes, I will not live this way."
"You have to. We need you."
She surrendered then to silent tears and racking sobs. He held her to him and finally had a moment to think. Dia
who in simulator combats cut down the enemy with a cold-bloodedness that sometimes shook the other squadron members. Where had she gone? Who was this doppelganger torn by grief in his arms? She had to be a Dia who lived under her shield of ruthlessness. Some remnant of the Dia who had been stolen as a child slave off Ryloth a dozen years before. As gently as he could, he said, "Dia, thank you for my life. If you hadn't done what you did, I would be dead. I would have failed to convince Zinj, and he would have killed us. I prefer to be alive, Dia. Thank you." He could see comprehension flickering in her eyes. Kel turned and caught her attention. "Dia, me too. Thank you. Without you, I'd be dead. Or in Zinj's tender care, worse than dead. Faith and I owe our lives to you." She stared at him in confusion for a long moment, then collapsed again into Faith's arms. "No," she said, and repeated it again and again as her tears flowed unchecked. And finally, she slept. Faith let Kel handle the routine tasks of getting them back to the Halmat system. He had just that much time to compose his report. A report in which he had to explain why it was that two subordinates had died in his immediate vicinity in just a few days. Wedge listened to Face's report. Then, as the pilot was leaving, he said, "Face, this was a successful mission. It may be the key to Zinj's undoing. If I'd known, if I'd been absolutely sure that to accomplish it would mean the life of one of my pilots, I'd have had to set it in motion anyway. You would, too." Face looked as though he were considering that possibility, then gave Wedge a brief nod. "Yes, sir. I suppose I would." He closed the door behind him. Wedge came out of his office at a fast walk and headed for the hangar area. Jansen rose and trotted to catch up. "How did it go?" "I'm leading children, and I'm getting them killed." "That's true." Almost to the door into the hangar, Wedge skidded to a stop.
"What did you say?"
"It's true." Jansen shrugged. "Wedge, you asked for misfits. So many of them are dragging around these weights of emotional problems. It makes it tougher for them to hop in the right directions at the right times."
"Well, maybe."
"Even with that, as a group, they're doing better than they ever had a right to. Some of them are fit to eat with real people, even to fly with other units. That wasn't the case when you founded the Wraiths."
"I suppose you're right."
Wedge suddenly felt weary. He turned back toward his office. Wedge and Jansen spent most of the rest of the day working on the data Zinj had provided to Face, to determine which planet the warlord had targeted. Jansen gave Wedge a bleak look. "He's going to hit Coruscant." Wedge shook his head. "That's what the data tells us if you dig down from the top layer. Yet this complement of ships isn't an exact representation of Coruscant's defenses. With Kastin gone, who's our best code slicer and computer handler?"
"Probably Lara Nutzel."
"Get her." She was slightly out of breath when she arrived.
"Flight Officer Lara Nutzel, reporting, sir."
Wedge waved her a casual salute. "Nutzel, tell me something. With what you know of our computers on hand, how good is our ability to translate statistical data of large military forces, their strengths, capabilities, that sort of thing, into the equivalent forces of other cultures?"
Lara considered. "Depending on the forces involved, sir, I think we can do a pretty good job."
Wedge copied the Zinj information to a fresh data pad and handed it over. "I want all this information translated into the nearest equivalent force of vessels and vehicles that are purely imperial in origin. Then come back here and we'll compare that with some planetary defense data." Outside, something odd was going on at the mess. All the chairs and tables had been drawn aside. A hand-painted sign decorated the main door into the module. "Mess closed by order of the pirate Runt." Runt now stood in the middle of the newly opened space, goggles over his eyes as he used one of the maintenance crew's backpack paint sprayers to put a layer of matte green paint down on the stone floor.
Wedge wandered over. Runt, what are you doing?
Painting for the ritual, sir.
You're going to have a ritual?
Yes, sir.
And who is going to be part of this ritual?
Well, we wanted to talk to you about that, sir. It would be a help to us if you would issue an order for all pirates to be here at 800 hours in full dress uniform.
Why should I do this? Wedge resisted the urge to laugh. Brunt seemed so earnest, so sincere.
Because I ask little and will deliver much.
Ah. Can you tell me what this is about?
Well, no, sir.
I see. Carry on. It took Lara only 2 hours to translate the data, and took her and Wedge less than 5 minutes to get a close match in their comparison of the new data with sites in Imperial space.
It's Kuat, Wedge said.
Zinj is making a raid on a space platform at Kuat. So, his objective isn't cargo, said Lara. He's after a Star Destroyer.
Wedge nodded. A Superstar Destroyer, just as Face predicted weeks ago.
Why don't we just alert the government of Kuat? Lara said.
No, Zinj has spies in place already, and they will notice any sudden preparations for invasion.
Wedge sighed.
I think we have to let Zinj get away with his new toy, and then jump them later.
How can we be sure where they'll be later? Jansen puzzled.
Lara, you know about Kastin's plan, about the program he was going to slice into the communication system aboard Iron Fist.
She nodded.
Can you adapt that for this new Superstar Destroyer?
Yes, sir.
See to it, then.
Runt's preparations of the galley area became more and more elaborate. He rigged an overhead spotlight that would bathe his green oval in light. To the same pole, he attached speakers, whose cables snaked all the way to the base communications center. Shortly before 800 hours, the wraiths began to assemble. A handful of seconds after the appointed hour, Runt was still not in evidence. Then the main lights cut out, leaving only the new spotlight, and Runt, quite dashing in his dress uniform, emerged from the galley.
My friends,
he said, waving his hands with unusual theatricality.
How glad we are that you have chosen to accept our invitation.
That elicited some chuckles, and Brunt plowed on.
So, this is a ritual we have seen among the military officers of the New Republic. It is called a formal dance. I have painted a lawn. Come forward and dance under the stars.
The wraiths looked at one another as though to inquire silently as to which of them would summon the military police in charge of pilot sanity. Tiggy huffed and said,
And if we decline?
Runt's expression became serious, even menacing.
We will have hurt feelings, and this is a compulsory dance, so we will shoot you.
Kel crossed to him, grabbed him by his fur-backed ears, and shook Runt's head.
Runt, that was a joke, a human-style joke. I'm so proud of you.
Runt smiled again.
We are pleased you are pleased.
Kel moved to the center of the absurd dance floor and extended a hand. Tyria came to him, smiling, and took it. Kel glanced significantly at Runt, who in turn nodded to an R5 unit who stood watch at the bottom of the pole on which the spotlight rested, and suddenly the music of a formal Alderaanian dance flooded the hangar, and Kel and Tyria danced, smiling at one another. The rest of the universe suddenly lost to them. Then Shala was out on the dance floor, beckoning Donas to join her. Jansen turned to Dia.
Shall we, wingmate?
Wedge approached Runt.
Good job. What gave you the idea?
For the dance? You did, sir. Wedge.
The name sounded as though it were almost too strange for Runt to utter.
You and Lieutenant Jansen walked by, talking of the hurt that Wraith Morale had suffered. When you have a hurt, you do not wait for it to heal. You set out to heal it.
Wedge smiled.
Good work, Runt.
Heated up.